Book of Numbers, chapter 36, last chapter in the book. As you recall from last week, we looked at how God set up cities of refuge for the people who had inadvertently killed somebody, a crime that wouldn't be necessarily intentional, but nonetheless tragic. God set up a means for those people to take refuge in cities that were spread throughout that whole region. And you can look at the maps of the old stories that are available, and you can see where these cities of refuge were placed. And it's an amazing thing because they were throughout the region in such a way that you didn't have to travel very far to get to one, no matter where you were in the Promised Land. And God was, of course, setting that up to be available for the people. God's always available, and he makes himself easily attainable. You can get to him quickly. You don't have to travel far. And he set these cities up so that the people who did something like get in a fight and then as a result one person dies in that, then there's a place for them to go to take refuge, to be held out while the family, so to speak, had to wait for the judgment to come, because the family was the police department, so to speak, in those days. If you were in a family, it was up to you to avenge the death of a loved one. And so ultimately, people would obviously be running for their lives because the family would be coming after them. And they had these cities of refuge. And we looked at the fact that as long as the high priest was alive, the person that was hiding out in the cities of refuge would be safe. He would be okay as long as that high priest was alive. And if the high priest died while he was hiding in one of the cities of refuge, then his penalty was paid. Great picture of Jesus Christ, of course. As long as his life is there, living for me in heaven, I'm safe. You see, because when he died, my penalty was paid. And it's a great picture and all the rest. But the people of Israel have had a hard time listening to the Lord. They've had a hard time dealing with the things he set up. Most of the ordinances God set up, and you can read through their history and it tells the tale, but most of the things God instituted, the people didn't take advantage of. We don't see them really using cities of refuge. We don't see them doing the ordinances and really keeping the feast days and all the rest. They just didn't do what God had set them up to do. So much available for them, and so little was taken advantage of by them. I find this is true for many, many Christians, that so much is available for us, and yet so little do we really take part in. So we come to the end of this chapter, in chapter 35, and we see that the Lord told the people, you see, not to pollute themselves and pollute the land with the blood of another and all the rest. And we looked at that in pretty good detail. But here's the thing. I want to jump right into chapter 36, because what happens next, and this is the end of the story. This is an amazing thing to me. At the very end of the whole book, God brings up something at the very end of the story, which at first glance doesn't seem to fit, but it's a real important lesson, and it won't take long to go through. But there was a problem that was brought up. Remember the daughters of Zelophehad? Remember them? They had some unusual names. Remember? Mahla. Remember Mahla and Tirzah and Hogla? and Milcah and Noah. These were the daughters of Zelophehad, and they had raised an issue with Moses earlier on because the inheritance was being, you know, divided up, and of course they weren't going to get an inheritance because all the sons in that tribe had died, and so there was no provision for daughters. And they went to Moses and said, it's not fair. You know, we should, as the daughters of our father, we should get an inheritance. And Moses took it before the Lord, as you recall, and God said, that's a good point. Let them have the inheritance. So they did. They gained their inheritance. But what happens here, an issue is brought up. It says in verse 1, the chief fathers of the families of the children of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, of the families of the sons of Joseph, came near and spake before Moses and before the princes of the chief fathers of the children of Israel. And they said, the Lord commanded my Lord to give the land for an inheritance by lot to the children of Israel, and my Lord was commanded by the Lord to give the inheritance of Zelophehad, our brother, unto his daughters. So we understand that this took place. You were instructed by the Lord, Moses, to give this land to the daughters of Zelophehad. And if they, though, verse 3, marry to any of the sons of other tribes of the children of Israel, then shall their inheritance be taken from the inheritance of our fathers and shall be put in the inheritance of the tribe whereunto they are received. So shall it be taken from the lot of our inheritance. So the families that are involved with the same tribe as these daughters are concerned that if the daughters get married to guys in other tribes, to men in other tribes, then the land that was supposed to stay in that tribe would be given to the other tribe. And so they say, you know, this is a problem. And when the Jubilee, verse 4, of the children of Israel shall be, then their inheritance be put under the inheritance of the tribe whereunto they are received, you know, the tribe they marry into. So shall their inheritance be taken away from the inheritance of the tribe of our fathers. So if this happens, these guys are saying, if these daughters of Zelophehad, if they marry outside of the tribe, then the land's going to go to that tribe. And when the year of Jubilee comes and all that, we won't get it back. The land will go back to the tribe that they married into. It's just the way it was going to be. And Moses, verse 5, commanded the children of Israel according to the word of the Lord, saying, the tribe of the sons of Joseph has said well. So Moses said, good point. That's another good point, see. And so Moses here says, okay, that's a noble point. Let's see what happens here. This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded. So Moses has obviously gone to the Lord again, checked things out, and comes back and says, well, here's what the Lord commands the daughters of Zelophehad. This is what they have to do. Let them marry to whom they think best, only to the family of the tribe of their father shall they marry. So let them marry who they want, as long as it's in the same tribe. So there's some restrictions here, although, you know, they're free to marry who they want, but who they want better be in the same tribe. They can't marry outside the tribe. And so it goes on to say, so shall not the inheritance, verse 7, of the children of Israel remove from the tribe to tribe. So in other words, the inheritance stays put in that same tribe, for every one of the children of Israel shall keep himself the inheritance of the tribe of his fathers. And every daughter that possesseth an inheritance in any tribe of the children of Israel shall be wife unto the one of the family of the tribe of her father, that the children of Israel may enjoy every man the inheritance of his fathers. Neither shall the inheritance remove from one tribe to another tribe, but every one of the tribes of the children of Israel shall keep himself to his own inheritance, even as the Lord commanded Moses, so did the daughters of Zelophehad. For Mahlah, Tirzah, Hoglah, Milcah, Noah, and the daughters of Zelophehad were married unto their father's brother's sons. And they were married into the families of the sons of Manasseh, the sons of Joseph, and their inheritance remained in the tribe of the family of their father. These are the commandments and the judgments which the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses unto the children of Israel in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho. Now, what's the point? What was the purpose of this? Well, it's an interesting thing. Here in the Old Testament, this ruling was laid out that the daughters here of Zelophehad, this man who had no sons, had only daughters and then died, leaving the inheritance, of course, unattended, and the daughters complained and got their way and all the rest, and then the issue's brought up. Well, what if they marry, you see, outside their tribe, then the land goes away. And there's an interesting parallel here, I think, in the New Testament, because This is something that comes up often, and I think it's here at the last of this book of Numbers, preparing to go into the promised land for a good reason. Because I see here something really, really important and something that's very overlooked, even in Christian circles, and that is marrying outside the tribe. When the tribe that you're in, when you're going to marry outside that tribe, something would take place here that was detrimental. What's that? Territory would be lost. Ground would be given up, basically. In other words, their inheritance would be taken, so to speak, would be scattered. And this is what happens, I'm afraid, folks, when, as Paul describes there in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, when a person is unequally yoked with another, there is a problem with that. And what's the problem? Well, first of all, you lose ground. You lose ground because if you, as Paul says there, and we can flip there if you like, just for a moment, because I think it's worth kind of looking at just for a second here. I'm not going to stay there too long, but I want you to understand something. 2 Corinthians 6:14. Paul says, here's the problem with this. Not only is the picture back here in the Old Testament very, very plain that ground is lost, inheritance is given up, so to speak. There's territory that's not going to be taken now as a result of this. Paul says the reason for that is this. Verse 14, be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God. As God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. And I will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. Paul says that there's a problem with marrying outside of the tribe, so to speak. The family. The body. Now, of course, you're saying, well, wait a minute, these were all tribes of the same nation. Yeah, they were. But they all had their own inheritance. They all had their own peace. And what was going to happen is if there was marriage outside of that relationship, outside of that tribe, then the territory would be lost or not taken. Ground would be lost. And you guys know this is true. Some of you know it oh too well. When marriage takes place that's unequal and yoked together, a believer with an unbeliever, you know the result of this. How much ground do you take? How much ground do you take for the kingdom? How much of the promised land do you really walk in? You really don't. You spend most of your time grieving over the unequal yoke that you're bonded to. And this is a tragedy. It's a shame. And so Paul says, hey, what the big problem is what do you have in common? What is it that you have in common? If Jesus Christ is your most important love, he's the one and true love of your life, and you really, really enjoy that relationship with him, but you can't share it with your spouse, wow. I mean, that means the most important thing to you cannot be shared with the one that you live with, that you live your life with. That's a shame. Paul said that's terrible, because if you don't have that in common, then what do you have in common? You see, for believers that really, truly want to walk with the Lord, and you guys know this is true, you want to talk about Jesus a lot. You want to talk about him. You want to share what he's showing you, what he's doing in your heart, what he's doing in your life. And when you don't have an equal yoked partner, you can't do it. I mean, you might try to talk about the Lord, but they don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear about that. Who cares? I mean, you know, I'm into something else. I'm doing something different, you know. Well, that's tragic. And the big problem is for a person individually, personally, if they seek this out, this unequal yoking, then no ground is taken. In fact, it's lost. You lose ground. And a person's life needs to consist of taking ground. That's what we're here for. That's what this book, that's why I believe it leaves on this note. We're ready to enter into the promised land. We're ready to go for it here. And when the last issue that comes up in this book is laid before us, it deals with this particular issue. If you're unequally yoked, you will not take ground. You won't take territory. And for you guys that are contemplating marriage, or you gals that are, you know, thinking about that, you know, don't make that mistake. Don't think that, oh, it's okay, I can change him. I got news for you. He's not changing. Or she's not changing. If it's you guys that are wanting that gal who's not saved or doesn't know the Lord, you think that, oh, they'd make such a great Christian if they just get saved, so I'll bring them to church. You know, well, that's great. Bring them to church. But listen, if they're coming to church just because they know you want them to, and they're going to appease that part of you just to get in there, you see, and get that relationship sewn up, you're in for trouble. Marriages that are unequal are problem marriages. Every single one. I know of none. I know zero marriages that are unequally yoked where there isn't problems. Big ones. So, do you want to take territory is the issue. And so Moses here says wisely, okay, here's the thing. Marry inside the tribe. Marry inside the tribe. You won't lose inheritance. You won't lose ground. You see, everybody's kind of happy here. This settled the issue for them. It settled things. It was right. It was the right thing to do. It's the right thing for us to do. Marry somebody you have something in common with. Besides, you know, you like the way their hair looks when it blows in the wind. If they have hair, that is. Or you like the way their eyes twinkle. You know, when, I mean, those are great things. I mean, I'm not discounting the in love thing. I know that that's important. But I'll tell you guys, if you don't have Jesus in common with that person, those things, the hair, the eyes, they fade. They change. You know, we're just not what we used to be. Now, that's not true in my case. My wife's prettier than she was when we got married, in reality. Is that okay, honey? Is that okay? The point is, though, that if you get married just because of that one thing or the other, which are usually what people are attracted to, the looks or the hey, the chemistry's there, you know, well, you know, chemistry changes too. If you don't have Jesus in the center of your marriage, in the center of your life, all those things that you counted on to get you through that tough time will not work. They won't make it for you. You need the Lord in common with that person. Then you can both pray together. You can share together. You can talk about him and talk about what he's doing and what he's showing us and what he's doing in our life. You know, man, it's such a huge difference. And you guys know this is true. I'm not going to belabor it, but take note of it. Territory's taken when there's an equal yoke. And some people, you see, will take this, you know, real far with this idea of marry inside the tribe. I think that there's more to it than just simply marrying a Christian personally. I think that you ought to marry somebody who's on the same page. You know, I mean, a lot of people profess to be Christians. I would be looking for somebody who possesses Christianity, not who professes it. Not just say, oh, yeah, I'm a Christian. Let's go out. Well, really? When did you meet Jesus? Huh? What? Meet him? You can find out a lot when you start probing a bit about someone's belief. When did you get saved? When did you meet the Lord and all the rest? Huh? I said I was a Christian, you know, not a freak. You know, what are you talking about? Well, you see, I believe it's important if you're going to get married to a believer, don't just get married to somebody who professes Christianity, but who you see is actually possessing that in their life.